Continental Flight 3407's cockpit was anything but sterile the night of February 12th. Colgan says the FAA doesn't require sim training on stall prevention systems. And you can lead a pilot to plenty of time off, but you can't make him get enough sleep. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, May 13, 2009. The NTSB yesterday released the transcript of the cockpit voice recorder aboard Continental Connection Flight 3407, and there seems to be little question the pilots of the Bombardier Q400 violated anyone's definition of sterile cockpit while on approach to Buffalo Niagara International Airport the night of February 12th. In a conversation which continued until less than 3 minutes before the plane came down on a home in suburban Clarence Center, New York, First Officer Rebecca Shaw and Captain Marvin Renslow chatted about icing and openly discussed shortcomings in both their own experience and in the training offered by the regional airline. Shaw commented that her 1,600 hours of flight time before being hired by Colgan were all flown in the Phoenix area, and that she experienced more ice on her first day at the new job than in all her previous log time. About 5 minutes before impact, she commented to Renslow, quote, "I've never seen icing conditions. I've never de-iced. I've never experienced any of that," unquote. About 3 minutes before the crash, Renslow commented that after flying in Florida, where the panhandle area of the state was the only place he'd seen ice, he was surprised by how much ice a Saab 340 turboprop could pick up, quote, "and still keep truckin'. Saw it out on the spinner, ice coming out about that far, my eyes about that big around. I'm going, gosh, I mean, Florida, man, barely a little, you know, out of Pensacola," unquote. The situation deteriorated rapidly after that, as the plane descended through 2,300 feet, with little to suggest the pilots knew exactly what was going on. NTSB investigators who examined the cockpit data recorder say one of the pilots responded to the plane's automated stall protection system by overpowering the stick pusher to command a sudden nose-up pitch, which stalled the plane. The 3407 crash will put training issues, especially among the regionals, in a harsh light for some time to come. The NTSB has determined that Renslow got no hands-on training with the stick shaker that alerts Q400 pilots to an imminent stall, or with the automated stick pusher designed to recover angle of attack automatically if the pilot fails to do so. In a recent interview with ANN, John King of the King Schools hypothesized that Renslow may have mistaken the stick shaking for a symptom of a tailplane stall, which would indicate a nose-up command in response. Neither pilot apparently noticed decaying airspeed until it was too late. The New York Times reports that Colgan admitted Monday that when it trains pilots in a flight simulator, the stick shaker and pusher are not part of the syllabus because the FAA doesn't require it. The airline has insisted throughout the investigation that its training of Renslow and his qualifications to be captain that night met all FAA requirements. It seems likely the NTSB will ask the FAA to add a few more requirements in the coming scrutiny. Renslow's pilot history is also drawing raised eyebrows. The Wall Street Journal reports he failed 5 check rides in cockpits and simulators. 2 of those failures happened after he was hired at Colgan, and the company says it knew about a 3rd before the hire, but that when Renslow applied for the job, he didn't mention 2 earlier failures during his general aviation career. Colgan says Renslow had been successful in 6 check rides since his last unsatisfactory, but the airline has also recently replaced a number of its senior check airmen. One issue which clearly had little to do with Colgan but is common across the industry is pilots choosing to make their homes in cities far from where they're based. In the case of Flight 3407, Renslow lived in Florida and Shaw in Washington State, but both were based in Newark, New Jersey. While both had plenty of available rest time before the accident flight, they didn't necessarily use it to rest. Both had to commute long distances to arrive at work February 12th. Notably, Shaw took a red-eye Wednesday night to arrive at work Thursday morning in New Jersey. Up next on ANN, Rockwell Collins enters flight testing for ProLine Fusion. Aireon says it's talking with partners about its supersonic bizjet. And a Beechcraft premiere sets a new speed record on the way to eBase. You are listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 13th. I'm Paul Plack. Lots of product announcements are coming out of EBACE, the European Business Aviation Convention and Exhibition in Geneva, Switzerland. While the event officially opened this morning, lots of companies released their product news on the eve of the show. Rockwell Collins announced the start of flight testing for its ProLine Fusion integrated avionics system, using a company airplane. The system is targeted at business class and larger aircraft, and the company is not afraid of the recession. Rockwell's Greg Ehrman commented, quote, "We are fully committed and looking forward to delivering this important next-generation avionics solution to our customers," unquote. The system has already been selected for new planes being developed by Bombardier, Mitsubishi, Gulfstream, and Embraer. Aireon is telling attendees at EBACE that it's in serious and detailed discussions with as-of-yet-unnamed potential OEM manufacturing partners. Aireon is developing what it hopes will become the first privately developed supersonic civilian aircraft. Aireon Vice Chairman Brian Behrens noted, quote, "This would represent the first joint civil supersonic development program in 47 years, and the last was a result of a treaty between two nations. So I think it's fair to say a new agreement would be historic, and one driven entirely by market dynamics," unquote. As you might expect, the question everyone has is when. Behrens would say only, quote, "We have tried to manage expectations. These are complex discussions involving many technical and business issues. What we can say is that they are moving in the right direction," unquote. Aireon has previously said the plane will take 5 years from successful proof of concept to entry into service. That suggests 2015 at the earliest, but so far, the plane has attracted orders said to total $4 billion. The Beechcraft Premier 1A has another notch in its belt. Sunday, on the way to EBACE, Robert Hoot Gibson flew the 627 statute-mile course from Hawker Beechcraft's international headquarters in Chester, UK, to Geneva, Switzerland, in 1 hour, 13 minutes, and 30 seconds, for an average speed of 511.9 miles per hour. Gibson thanked aircraft owner Robert Kay, who flew right seat, for the use of his airplane. Quote, "I like to call the Premier 1A a baby rocket ship. Its speed and handling qualities are exceptional. It's the type of aircraft that pilots love to fly," unquote. This is not Gibson's first class speed record. He broke two city pair records previously held by Cessna Citations in 2004. He'll be in the HBC booth at EBACE to talk with attendees about the Premier 1A and the mock-up of the next generation Premier 2. Still ahead, an STC will allow putting a new Lycoming 0390 in your Cessna 175. Is this really a good time to launch a new series of aviation shows? And Boeing introduces what may become the next generation Pelosi One. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, May 13th. I'm Paul Plack. If you have a Cessna 175 that could use a 20% shot in the arm power-wise, Stutz Aviation of Fairbanks, Alaska may have just the thing. Stutz says it's nearing an STC to retrofit the Lycoming IO390 into the plane, following its successful STC using the IO360. 2,000 Cessna 175s were built between 1958 and 1962. They originally came equipped with a 175-horsepower geared Continental piston engine called the GO300. Reliability issues kept that power plant from making many new friends, and many 175s have already been upgraded. Stutz says the Lycoming IO390 improves both power and efficiency. The company says once it has the FAA paperwork in hand for the retrofit, the Cessna 172 will be next. The timing may seem counterintuitive, but following a reported successful event in Tampa, Florida, a new series of Florida aircraft expos are being scheduled for later this month. Manufacturers including Cessna, Cirrus, Diamond, Husky, Jabiru USA, Liberty, Mooney, Piper, and Rimos are expected to be joined by aviation tax consultants and other related businesses at shows now scheduled for Orlando Executive Airport on Thursday, May 21st, Daytona Beach International on Friday the 22nd, and Melbourne International on Saturday the 23rd. Later this summer, more shows are scheduled in South Florida, and similar shows are being organized in other parts of the Southeast U.S. and in Texas. You can find out more at FloridaAircraftExpo.com. And finally, Washington politicians have made it uncool to be associated with small business jets. But apparently Boeing still believes in the future of larger Pelosi-class personal jets adapted from airliners. At eBase, Boeing is debuting its new 747-based BBJ convertible. No, it's not a ragtop. It's a plane which the company says can be converted from huge executive transport to huge cargo carrier in as little as 8 hours. Boeing says the convertible allows governments, corporations, and private individuals to use the same aircraft for transporting VIPs, staff, or troops, delivering disaster relief supplies, conducting medevac, or transporting everything from tools and machinery to race cars or race horses, or equipment for touring musicians. Boeing is also offering a new 75-square-meter second-story addition for the 747 BBJ, added after production between doors 3 and 5, with stairway access from the main cabin. And obviously, for anybody ordering this plane, taking on additional overhead is not a concern. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, part two of last week's news conference with four mayors whose cities depend on general aviation. We'll hear their answers to questions from reporters. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCast. Find them on iTunes, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.